Okay, on the line we should have a very interesting guest. Daniel, are you there?
I'm right here. Okay. Hi, Tom.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Okay, this is Daniel Giammario, shamanic astrologer, and very interesting fellow on very many subjects. What do we want to talk about today, Daniel?
Well, I think in our when we talked about this before, there were at least two things we were going to discuss. One would be the 2012 information,
okay,
from a variety of different angles.
Okay.
And then the other would be a view as toward the economic situation.
Which would you like to do first?
Well, what did you? I think maybe we can start maybe with the 2012 stuff.
Okay. All right. So let's give some background, and that is that 2012 has been featured in a lot of people's thinking and writing for many years now.
I was actually one of the first two people from the astrological and astronomical world to actually first write about what at that time was calling the turning of the ages, and then later was referred to as the galactic alignment. And
okay.
Then more recently, particularly in the last 5, 6, 7 years, there's pretty much a whole cottage industry that has grown up around the subject of 2012.
Okay, for people that aren't conversant, how about giving a very brief explanation of the 26,000-year cycle? Because I think that even people that aren't conversant with astrology could latch onto that and understand that 26,000-year cycle.
The longest cycle that it's capable, that it's possible to actually experience in the senses from one lifetime to the next is the 26,000-year cycle. I mean, there are definitely much longer cycles, like the fact that it takes 250 million years for our solar system to go around the center of the galaxy. That's a real cycle, but you can't really have much of a kinesthetic relationship with that long of a cycle.
Okay.
So the 26,000 year that's rounded from 25,820, and there's actually a couple of other dates that are specifically given for it. The 26,000 is the average, and it's actually a cycle that comes that is based directly on the motions of the Earth in space, the fact that the Earth has a specific tilt, a particular wobble, so that it actually, because of the wobble and the tilt of our Earth in space, it takes 26,000 years for there to be one wobble of the Earth when it's spinning, so that we get different North Stars every, at least 7 main ones every 26,000 years. So like Polaris is north now, but 13,000 years ago it was Vega. 13,000 years in the future it'll again be Vega. And this phenomena has been called the precession of the equinoxes. So that basically what you have over a period of 26,000 years, if you take a date like spring equinox date, or the autumnal equinox date, or the summer solstice date, or the winter solstice date, there will be different stars that will actually be appearing during that season over a period of time. So that that over 26,000 years, the sky is continually changing with reference to the a person is looking at the sky from the Earth. The galactic alignment phenomena is based on the fact that the greater calendric reference point in the sky, the plane of our solar system and the plane of our galaxy, intersect two places in the sky. These are like great crosses in the sky. Those are fixed reference points in the sky where the galactic plane and the solar system plane intersect. And over 26,000 years, the sun at the solstices or the equinoxes will be on those crosses 4 times every 26,000 years. And now we're in that time period when, for the only time in a 26,000-year cycle, the winter solstice sun is on one of the crosses, and the summer solstice sun is on the other cross.
Okay.
This is the cross which is right at the galactic center.
So let me interject with an extreme layman's perspective and see if you agree. And that is that when we're talking about all of these things, what we're talking about energies and force fields in the sky. And what you seem to be saying is that there's a particular alignment that's happening right now that's creating a particular force field, and that force field may or may not be affecting us.
Well, I'll give an example, because for people of our current culture who are not particularly trained to tune into the calendar in the sky, or you know, being familiar with where the solstices and the equinoxes in the sky are, and to see where the crosses in the sky are, much easier example would be is that if, say, you went to Stonehenge or the megalithic monuments of Peru, or any medicine wheel, or any place that is oriented toward the directions and toward solstices and equinoxes and things like that. Right now, if you went out to watch the sun come up or set at summer solstice or at winter solstice, you'd be actually seeing the sun, sensing the sun, energetically tuning into the sun as the sun is in alignment with these two crosses. And that only happens, if we're including all the equinoxes and the solstices, four times in 26,000 years.
Again, getting back to my analogy, that would mean that the sun's energy is being affected by these particular crosses that are going on behind it, and that might have a particular effect upon planet Earth and the people of planet Earth.
Well, and the many, many traditional peoples and different cultures have actually considered that to be the case, which is, some would say, is why they built those monuments in the first place, in order to actually sense into these really powerful energetic alignments.
And if we look at these monuments and say they weren't simply monuments, but they were energetic machines, and they were supposed to concentrate energy, and if you went to those monuments at those particular times, you would receive a massive or increased dose of that particular energy.
My own personal interest, other than the fact that I can certainly also sense into the energies of such places, is that I do look at it as from a calendric perspective. These are clocks. These are indicators of where we are in time. And then the question would come up, well, all right, we got the sun on the crosses. And you probably have seen it, Chamba, but that internet circulated a movie called Zeitgeist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which, fascinating.
The first third of it is on this particular subject, that whether from originally the Egyptian stellar religion to actually many aspects of Christianity, that this SON/SUN on the cross for 3 days is actually with reference to sun on these two crosses in the sky.
Okay, and for listeners that aren't familiar with that, they could look up on the internet Zeitgeist, Zeitgeist. Do a Google search and you'll come up with a fascinating, I think it's in three parts, four parts.
Yeah, the first third is on cosmology, which will include some of the factors that I'm speaking about right now. The second has to do with 9/11, the myth of 9/11.
Right.
And then the third portion, which will be the subject of a latter part of our conversation today, which is on about the money system, the economic situation.
Okay, so I think I need to put a cautionary warning in, and that anybody that's complacent in the thinking that the government gives you and doesn't want to do any new thinking, do not see Zeitgeist.
I'm quite certain you, on previous shows, Chamba, have made reference to the second portion of that movie.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes,
we have. The 9/11 material.
Yes, we have. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get back to 2012, because there's a lot of, and you call them cottage industries, so I want to discuss that a little more.
Yeah.
But
2012 thing is the fact that after the... Well, pretty much right around the same time period that cosmologically oriented astrologers and also individuals that tune into the stories and myths of traditional peoples, as we became aware of the fact that there was this galactic alignment and what we in our school call the turning of the ages. Around that same time, more and more information became available. It became very popular to speak of the Mayan long count, which, according to many of the those that have researched it, it looks like it ends at winter solstice 2012. And that was one of about 19 different Mayan calendric systems. And there's a lot of different ideas about it. There's very little agreement about it.
Hang on. There's 19 different
Mayan calendar. Yeah. They're tracking pretty much everything. I mean, every planetary cycle. And so the Lawn count was just one of their many different calendars.
Oh, okay.
And the long count, according to some people, those that really tune into the processional cycle, is there are five of them. And if you multiply five times 5,100 and some days, then you end up with the same processional number, 26,000 years. And the current long count ends on winter solstice 2012, according to many.
Okay.
Now, I will say that what I meant about a cottage industry, not only is there a cottage industry of those that are really into 2012, my colleague John Major Jenkins calls the industry 2012-ology. You know, I mean, I could do talks on this all the time, but there's probably 100, 150 people out there that are doing presentations currently about the 2012 information.
As a matter of fact, there's somebody that's speaking here this weekend, and I'm going to announce that later in the show. So, yes.
But there also is another emerging group, and we could say the counter cottage industry, and that is of this, which are the 2012 debunkers.
Okay.
You know, which are basically saying this is all much ado about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I come down somewhere in the middle. I do know from the place of the cosmology of the greater calendrics that we can actually see in the sky that something really major is taking place. Only one time in 26,000 years can the winter solstice sun be on one of these crosses, and that's happening right now, and it's happening right at the galactic center. There's a whole lot that could be said about that. So I know there's something very important taking place, but it's just in the last 6 months there have been a variety of different counter viewpoints regarding the significance of, you know, say, December solstice, the solstice 2012. The head of the Council of Mayan Daykeepers, in a talk he gave last year, basically said that he kind of disavowed the whole thing and said that we Mayan daykeepers don't even know what day it is because all the books were burned. And then we have people, researchers like Kalaman, whose work that I really highly respect, he puts the date at 2011. Meanwhile, other people came out recently to say, well, they didn't take into account the Gregorian calendar reform, and it's actually 2008. Meanwhile, if we use the results that scientists come up with, the exact precise point of the galactic alignment has already happened. It was actually May of 1998. But I'm not so hung up at all about some specific date. I just know that we're in the zone of a great turning of the ages, and whether something happens on December solstice 2012 or not is, I think, less important.
Okay, and for those of us that are just here on planet Earth struggling to make a living or doing what we're doing, is there any overall indication of some of the ramifications?
Sure. I mean, if we look at history, the last time that the sun was on the crosses at one of the turning points, like 6,500 years ago, is when the equinox sun was on the different on the two crosses.
Okay.
The two different equinoxes on the two different crosses, and that was the beginning of so-called recorded history. It was also the time period of the so-called megalithic age. You know, when many of these great stone circles and chambered cairns, and from Newgrange to things in Peru to Middle East, all over the world, these great building projects, half the pyramids, obviously, and so on. And we also know not from the perspective of recorded history, but from the perspective of geology, that some major stuff happened on this planet about 13,000 years ago, the last time when the solstice suns, winter and summer solstice suns were on the crosses. That was the time period where just in the last 6 months there's been more and more discoveries of the iridium layer, the deposits that would indicate that something pretty major happened on this planet. I personally think it was a 20% shift in the crust of the Earth that took place at that point.
Okay, so if I might paraphrase, during previous occurrences of this cycle.
Yes.
There seems to be evidence that there were natural calamities that were catastrophic. The Earth's crust might have shifted.
Right.
There might have been asteroids hitting
right.
the planet. Whatever happened, major catastrophic destruction on Earth.
That was the 13,000 year ago
okay.
time. 6,500 years ago was this showing up in the human history of seemingly out of nowhere, like a very high culture.
Right, that may have evolved on the planet and quite possibly could have been brought in from off planet, but the period of time was
a quarter turn on the 26,000 year cycle. Yeah.
Okay, so. Bottom line is, we should not be surprised if there are major, major changes on planet Earth.
Yeah, and one of the views, the one that was originally popularized by Terence McKenna, who also very much into the 2012 material, but also more recently, very wonderfully promoted and presented by people like Greg Braden,
mm-hmm.
which is the zero point concept, which is kind of the reverse of the beginning of recorded history. 6,500 years ago, and it's sort of the end of history, or the end of time, that the linear exponential and linear and then exponential increase of data and information and knowledge reaches a zero point by 2012.
Oh, really? Okay, so if you were a biblical apocalypse mm-hmm. prognosticator, then 2012 might be the end of the world. If you took another viewpoint, Braden is saying that it's the end of knowledge, which might
well end. It depends on I think how you would want to view knowledge. There's the acceleration of information is what they would be mainly referring to. You know, trying to track the idea being maybe in 1,000 years knowledge doubles, in 500 years it doubles again, in 250 years it doubles, and then by the time we get to 2012, the doubling of information is like every second, and then every half second, and then every one-fourth of a second.
You mean there's more I have to remember?
Maybe that question is, whenever I think about it from that perspective, it might be a really great relief that we don't have to.
You know, I like that.
The great magic would be is that we actually are able to go into timelessness and spaciousness.
Oh, okay.
And so that beginning of recorded history, 6,500 years ago, the beginning of a linear accumulation of information and knowledge, and then by 2012, an opportunity to shift to a different way of apprehending and experiencing who we are.
Okay.
Now, I certainly, but just to follow up on something you said, I myself personally do not perceive the turning of the ages or the galactic alignment or the 2012 situation as being something apocalyptic or Armageddon or disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
In the shamanic astrology approach, we like to view anything that happens from three different places simultaneously. So any event that might happen, even what we're going to be discussing a little bit later, the economic crisis, any event has to be looked at three ways.
And this is
kind of something that comes out of Shamanism 101.
Okay.
It's either looked at from the celestial or the upper world. It's looked at from the middle world or the real world or objective reality. and it also has to be looked at from the perspective of the underworld. Example of what I mean would be, if we look at something like an economic crisis, then from the place of the celestial or the upper world,
okay,
well, the response to that would be, oh, all is well. The universe is unfolding as it should.
Okay.
From the perspective of the middle world, well, then we have to be very practical and realistic about it. You know, yes, what do we do about the fact that so many people have lost their jobs? Or what do we do about the ecological situation? What do we do about nuclear proliferation and so on? Pick whatever poison you want to talk about. But then from the perspective of the underworld, it's actually a different kind of spiritual initiation. It's really giving people an opportunity to surrender, to drop their attachments, based on circumstances of the world, being forced to look at who they really are, not their role, not a human being's role or contribution or perfection or how much they know or, you know, how whether they're successful or unsuccessful, but beneath all of that, who are we really?
Could we tie into that the concept that's getting more and more popularity here, that we need to humans need to simplify our lives, get in touch with what's of real intrinsic value to us, and shed a lot of the other things that we've been told are valuable, but
right,
perhaps
completely.
Are not?
It's just it's not just a mental exploration of that, but at a being forced to look at that on the deepest of all levels about just who are we really? And then what are our attachments?
Okay, and what are then out of that? What are our goals? What are our values? What are our goals?
Yes, and one practical expression of that would be that in the type of astrological/psychological/spiritual work that we do in our school, it's actually to say, well, there's never been a time where it's more necessary to get in touch with purpose. What is our life purpose? If it's not the kinds of things that we were trained by our culture to believe they were, well, then what are they? The time period. It's kind of like we don't have any other excuses in order to put that off.
Oh my God! You mean if I'm not worried about the next new car I'm going to buy, I have to think more deeply about what life's all about?
Or the next new girlfriend, or the next place to live, or just really what is Chama, what I'm thinking about here is that there is an assumption that I'm making, and that assumption is that when we do come into the life, there is a meaning or a purpose to our existence. And I mean, not everybody would necessarily agree with that, but that is an assumption that's being made here.
Okay.
I'm making the assumption that it's not a crapshoot.
Got it. Okay, I want to interrupt for a minute and do some station business, and that gives you a moment to collect your thoughts, and then maybe it's time to move on to the economy. Okay. So, the time is 12:31 in the p.m. The station is KVMR-FM, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chamba Lane. The name of the show is Rabble Rousing, and we're pleased to have as our guest today Daniel Giammario, who is a shamanic astrologer. And we should probably mention, Daniel, that if anybody is interested in contacting you for any number of reasons, how do they do so?
Well, just to go directly to the Shamanic Astrology website, shamanicastrology.com, and information about our school, also ways to get a hold of me. And also, if you go to that website, on the front page of the website, you can just put your email in and get a free newsletter.
Great, and that's a monthly newsletter?
At least monthly.
Okay.
Sometimes more.
Okay.
Shamanicastrology.com.
Shamanicastrology.com. That's all one word.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's switch focus. The economy, the meltdown.
Well, if it's okay, I'd like to just read something that I wrote.
Absolutely.
Update on the economic crisis. The movement of Pluto and Jupiter into Capricorn last year, not surprisingly, exposed the illusion and scam of most of the world's economic systems, especially those that use the fiat fractional money systems controlled by private central banks. Last year I wrote that the meltdown was real and that the system we've known won't be returning to quote normal ever. accepting a possible short-term Obama bubble, giving us another year or so to take this all seriously. I still feel this way. Pluto has exposed the, quote, shadow of the current economic system. Additionally, Jupiter's passage through Capricorn last year further exposed that the greed-based, unlimited expansion of the current system is not sustainable, ethical, or even possible. The new emerging paradigm of Capricorn as being the domain of the, quote, circle of grandmothers is the best practical reality for the sustainability and livability of planet Earth and global humanity. The Capricorn mission and purpose statement, which is to administer, manage, and attend to the needs of the seven generations to follow, must now be turned over to the circle of grandmothers. For those who desire to understand more clearly the economic perspective, I recommend, and then I basically, very still, I think it's worth reading, is Matt Taibbi's April 2nd Rolling Stone article.
Oh, yeah, I read that last week on air.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, then this is timely that we're talking about this. Of course, it is not necessary to understand or even be interested in the details of the financial system to intuit, feel, and sense the illusory foundations of the system that have been exposed. Comparing it to a casino and or gigantic Ponzi scheme is neither sensationalist or fear-mongering. It is the unfortunate truth. But what I'm wanting to offer is a different perspective to the fear and uncertainty that so many are feeling. What I'm experiencing from more and more people from all places on the political, philosophical, and spiritual spectrum of life is a growing sense of deep relief.
Release.
Many of us have known the current economic system was a hoax, and yet in spite of our better instincts, we found ourselves going along with it, not knowing of any real workable alternative that we could engage in within the construct of such an all-pervasive system. Secretly, many of us have longed for a different economic system, founded and grounded on more holistic values emerging from a healthy, mature idealism, as explained in previous articles about the Aquarian contribution. And then basically, I still feel this building in a really major way. For those who love historical research, note the last times Pluto was in Capricorn were 1760 through 1776, and also 1512 and 1528. Those are very interesting times also as far as doing the inquiry into our current time.
The first time was the birth of this nation.
Right.
And how do you see the second time period?
Well, that was the time period of the, among other things, the age of explorers.
Oh, okay.
You know, which had both a good news and bad news side.
It depends where you lived.
Yeah, that's right.
The period of time you said 1815.
1760 through 1776 and 1512 through 1528.
Oh, 1512. Got
and
it.
And now 28 to, from 2008 until 2024 is the next time that this phenomenon is taking place.
Okay. Major, quite possibly a major shift in planetary consciousness.
Well, that's really what is being prompted, for sure. The mistakes that I have made over the years astrologically have always been in the realm of thinking things were going to happen sooner than they do. The seeds of what we're experiencing now were back in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it would be senseless for any individual to think that it's going to go back to the way it was before. And what I was trying to point out in what I wrote was that I think that a lot of people feel a great deal of relief about this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just to offer a little bit of perspective, and that is the phenomena of energy shifting and then the result showing up on the planet and the time delay, which you point to as being one of the things you didn't pay that much attention to previously and are doing now. Let me point out that it seems like, let's look at science. You have a scientific truth. The Earth is flat. the Earth revolves around the sun. And it takes a generation of scientists to die off.
You mean the sun around the Earth?
I'm talking about previous knowledge which was disproved, but it took a generation of scientists to die off before the new generation came in and say, wait a minute, there's new information, there's new knowledge. So there's a time delay. The same thing takes place politically. You have a growing awareness that women should be given the right to vote. But it takes a whole generation of politicians dying off before a new generation of politicians comes in and says, hey, guess what? We need to do that. We need to make that change.
With reference to the whole thing about the circle of grandmothers,
okay.
Where I've gotten that from is that our founding, quote, fathers, most of the original inspiration for the Articles of Confederation was from the Iroquois Confederacy.
Okay.
But they left out the most salient feature of the Iroquois Confederacy, which was that at the top of the hierarchy were the Circle of Grandmothers. This was a body of women who could fire the chief. These were not grandmothers just hanging out with the grandchildren. They were a council of women who made the final determination about what was going to be happening for the next seven generations.
Fascinating.
And that's how I'm perceiving Capricorn today.
Okay.
This has been known by traditional people in certain parts of the world for a long time, but it was conveniently left out of our own founding documents, even though they were inspired. They could have been inspired by that. And now, that's the only workable plan I can see. And when I'm talking about Circle of Grandmothers, I'm not only talking about women. This is not a gender thing. There are plenty of men who work with the Circle of Grandmothers.
So we're talking about a circle of elders.
But are coming from the perspective of the Earth,
mm-hmm.
not some obsolete, guilt-based, shame-based, perfection-oriented father god that is concocting the myth that is associated with original sin.
Okay, and what I'm trying to add to this mm-hmm. is that don't expect this to happen overnight. This is something that's in the works, but it's going to take a generation. Or several.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the clearest examples will be what's taking place in California right now. Anybody with any common sense realizes that gays deserve equality. And yet the body politic is resisting that, and it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening, but it's going to take time. The same thing happened with women's right to vote, with black equality. All of these issues... There's a groundswell, but it takes time. What do you see economically? Do you think that we're ever going to be able to abolish the Federal Reserve System and central banking and get back and abolish fiat money and get back to money that's based on real value?
Well, it's that particular way of making money has its built-in extinction. It has to happen after a certain number of years.
Explain.
It got out of control just in the last few years. The fractional money creation system,
right?
Where a bank I think the way it's officially run right now is that if you have $100 of a deposit, then you can lend out 9.5 times that, and so you can see how quickly that expands the pyramid.
Right.
But apparently, during the derivatives scam and hedge fund scams, basically they started going anywhere. They actually expanded it out to 30 times what they thought they had. And then, you know, if they thought they had $100, then you can end up creating 30 times that, just by what you can put on a computer screen.
Right.
But then they discover they didn't have $100 to begin with. and so basically it's a system of creating money that is based on debt. It has to keep spiraling outward as a pyramid. It is really just another Ponzi scheme. And this has happened in the history of humanity. I think back as far as the 1500s and 1600s, this has kept happening. What I was referring to in the article that I was reading from was that the election of Obama, and then clearly by noticing that he hires people like Larry Summers and Timothy Geithner to be in charge of the Treasury.
Foxes in the hen house.
Well, but it's just it's so interesting because if you listen to, say, the voices on the right, you know, the Republican scaremongering is that, oh, this proves that it's, you know, socialism, communism, you know, the government is taking over the banks. Nonsense. It's actually the banks have taken over the government entirely. You know, so if you think of it from the perspective of back when the central bank is printing the money for the country,
right,
and then they're then paid in interest.
They're really renting the money to the country.
Most of the national debt up to a certain point was because of the interest to the central bank. However, these trillions of dollars that have been printed were not at any interest. So what in the world is the payoff going to be to the Federal Reserve? Well, it's going to be, of course, that there's no longer are they some shadowy figure in the background that is actually in charge that we didn't know. They are now formally in charge. I mean, basically Obama, as far as I can see, is taking orders directly from the central bank.
Yeah.
And so it's really the banks and the government are the same thing at this point. Because you can't give the Federal Reserve any more interest because the money's being printed with no interest.
Now, if you go back to around the turn of the century through the 30s, you've got a retired Marine Corps general, Smedley Butler.
Yes.
And he made the statement that every war he ever fought in was a banker's war.
Yes.
So we're simply having an escalation of what's been going on for a long time, and that is the banking, the major banks, international banks, are basically taking over our government.
And the difference between the way it's being handled today and the way that it was handled in the 20s,
yeah,
is that at that point the United States, the country, didn't have any debt. And so therefore the way the Federal Reserve dealt with it then was withholding money. So there really wasn't the flooding of the markets with money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had massive deflation and there was no money in circulation. They had to do it differently this time. Because actually what I mean by the Obama bubble is that the only way to keep the game going, at least for another year, is to make China and Japan and Russia feel that we still could be a consumer nation. Because they basically own our treasury notes. And so that if we didn't pump lots of money to the banks directly and then allegedly into the economy so that we can become a consumer nation again, why would they want to keep our treasury bills? So therefore, it's the exact opposite strategy that was done in the 1920s.
Well, what are they going to do now? Japan, China, and Saudi Arabia, they own all of these treasury bills.
Right. Well, the game can only be maintained as long as there's some viable economy here in order to keep buying their stuff. And that's what I meant by an Obama bubble. If the Republicans had their way, then basically we wouldn't even have a year. We'd already be in overt bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something earlier that I want some clarification on. You were speaking of the U.S. monetary system and fiat money that's issued and controlled by the central bank. Mm-hmm. Is there any country on the planet that does not have fiat money? I don't know that any of them are backed by gold or silver. Aren't they all fiat money?
I think there may be a couple. In fact, there's been this whole... I wish I had more specific information on this. I've heard about the creation of what's called the golden dinar, which is an Islamic currency based on gold.
Oh, wait a minute. You can't put Islam in a favorable light, Daniel. We can't stand for
let me bring in something else here. I don't know whether or not there does exist the golden dinar, but their banking systems don't, according to Islam, usury is not permitted.
Yeah, they don't allow interest.
Right.
If you're going to make a loan, you're going to make a loan because... the people deserve the money. You're not doing it so you make money.
So there are certain Islamic countries that have not participated in the global system. The ones that have are the ones that are taking the greatest hit. Places like Dubai.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, they did participate in it. And, I mean, unfortunate for them because, of course, their huge prosperity, how incredible it was going on there, is falling apart. Because they did participate in the global Ponzi scheme.
And one might suspect they're going to be a little bit unhappy.
Right.
And a little bit upset.
Okay. I'd be tremendously fascinated to know if there does exist a
golden dinar.
Or some other country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a friend of mine a year and a half ago, who said, oh, yeah, I'm from New Zealand, and the New Zealand money, that's a good one, because we're not tied into the same system. Well, that turned out to be not true at all. I mean, they've taken an even bigger hit there.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, we've got a call. Willing to entertain a caller?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Yes. Gosh, when I hear you guys talk, you started off talking about the spiritual aspects and the visionary, astrological forecast.
Right.
And as we start talking about what exists today, I can't help but think, as I've been studying the monetary system and after I watched the film Money is Debt and The Money Masters and read the book The Web of Debt, and the more I understand, and especially after I heard you, what prompted me to call is I heard you talking about Obama and being, basically in the hands of the bankers. And I just can't help want to steer the conversation to what is, since we know that our hierarchical leadership is in the hands of the, this top-down thing, the way it plays itself out, what are the people going to do, the conscious ones like us, in this time of awakening, as we start to awaken? What does the people's money look like? How are we going to issue the currency not based on debt? I know several of the candidates, Cynthia McKinney for the Green Party, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul on the Republican side, Ralph Nader's always advocated, some sort of massive reform that is more like nationalizing the currency, not nationalizing the banks like it's being talked about, but nationalizing the currency so the people can form their own currency. And it's going to have to be done because, those other candidates I just mentioned, they weren't financed by, the bankers, so therefore they didn't get into the public limelight the way, Obama and
You're making some wonderful points. Can you pull that in together into a question?
Yes, so my question is,
great.
So can we steer this conversation to how conscious people like us can start to form a non-debt-based issuance of our currency? What would that look like, and how can we start to do that? I want to meet with you guys. Now that I hear what can we do to start to create our own currency? What do we create? Local currency? I know the producer from the film Money is Debt is working on a second one. He's got a thing called Digital Coin that he's going to be introducing, and I don't know much about it, but he's totally excited about it. And so it's called Money is Debt 2.
This sounds like a terrific topic for a future show.
Yeah.
So let's let Daniel answer to what capacity he can. However, I want you to contact me off air, and let's talk about who we can get on air to promulgate these ideas.
Okay. Paul Grignon, who produced that film, I'd love to get him on.
Okay, so why don't you contact me, chamba@kvmr.org, and let's look into this, okay?
You got it. Thank you, Chamba.
Okay, and thank you for your call.
Okay, go back to the conversation. Thank you for getting me fired up.
My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Daniel, any comments on what he just said? Daniel? Oh, boy. All right, we lost Daniel, so let's have some music while I get Daniel back on the air. So we're back on air, and let's continue our conversation. Now, wait a minute. Let's see. Yeah. Now, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to be VIP'd, so I can talk to somebody else and you remain on air. But when I punched them on, it dropped you off. It's too bad you didn't hear it. They had a very lengthy question, and mainly it let me get you on air. Hang on. Okay, Daniel, you on air?
Yeah, now I'm back. Uh-huh.
Okay, sorry for that. All right, you did not hear the previous caller who had some fascinating points to make, and the bottom line was he wanted to return our discussion. We've only got 5 minutes left. He wanted to return our discussion to a more spiritual perspective and what we the people can do to create an economic system and a currency that's not tied into fiat money in the federal banks. And unfortunately, with a question that deep, you've only got less than 5 minutes.
Well, these days, whenever I'm when that's brought up, I just simply offer to people that the idea that the only real resource we have are our friends, our community, our family, the people that we can open our hearts to and to live our lives together with. But it would seem to me that that it's going to be done by individuals networked together, locally, and with the idea that there's never ever been a time more necessary to do it. I mean, it's one way or the other. We can either know this is coming and decide to put our hearts and minds together and create something fresh and new, or we'll just have to pick up the pieces for what will inevitably have to fall apart.
Okay. So do you have any final thoughts before we terminate this for the day? We're about out of time. Is anything else you want to say?
Well, yeah, I could mention that actually we're having this conversation today, which astrologically is a really significant point. Right now, Jupiter and Neptune and Chiron are all conjunct at the latter degrees of Aquarius. And so, to me, what it symbolizes is what is the number one thing. I was actually speaking sort of negatively about, I call it the Obama bubble, but what is really positive about the Aquarian time period, him being an Aquarian rising president, is the fact that it's the time for mature idealism, grown-up idealism, that it's not naive to be talking about the kinds of things that we're speaking of regarding life purpose and making the world work for everyone and things like that. That's a practical reality today.
Terrific.
Grown-up, mature idealism, not just like something that many would think we're supposed to grow out of when we're in our past our 20s.
Okay, so this is what we're growing into.
Well, yeah, and today is an amazing day to connect with our visionary ideals.
Great. Okay, Daniel, we're out of time. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Great talking with you as always, Chamba.
As always.
All right. See you down the road.
Absolutely. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.